Hi, I'm Doug Gordon. Welcome back to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio. I think it was Eve Barzilay who once coined the phrase, all life is suffering. That sounds about right, right? Anyway, the frontman for alt-country luminaries, Clem Snide, has had his share of suffering during his long-storied career. But Eve says he's always been able to get through it by writing songs. Clem Snide's latest record, Forever Just Beyond, navigates the mysteries of the human condition and features Eve's classic dark humor and newfound grace. He joined us to talk about the album and the wandering road of Clem Snide.
After high school, I moved to Boston. I tried Berklee College of Music for a couple semesters. Didn't take. So I dropped out of Berklee and I was just living in Boston and I was trying to get into some bands. So I got into this one band and I sort of broke up the band and I picked up the pieces and that became Clem Snide in the early 90s. So yeah. It started in Boston, kind of more sort of a punk rock. It was very screamy, very shrieky. And then when we moved to New York, that's when I think I got more serious about writing songs.
Yeah. The band's name is a reference to a William S. Burroughs character, and your songs often sound a little melancholy, and there's dark humor all over the place, which kind of has a Burroughsian or Burroughs-esque vibe. Was Burroughs a big influence?
I'm a little embarrassed by the name. I came up with that name when I was 20 years old, and I was trying hard to be some sort of beatnik. Yes. And yeah, so I just grabbed the name randomly. I didn't think much about it. At first, actually, it was just Snide. Not many people know that, but the first incarnation of the band when it was more shrieky was just called Snide. And then I added the Clem, I think, when it started getting more countrified.
Snide's a great name for a punk rock band, and then that doesn't betray any Burroughs influence. But I find it interesting that you say you were embarrassed, because as you said, there are a lot of other bands, Steely Dan.
Soft Machine.
Soft Machine, yes, that's right.
I always secretly wish that we were called Soft Machine.
Oh, yeah.
That's a nice name.
But is there a particular Clem Snide song that feels most Burroughsian to you?
I think the older stuff was trying more to be subversive or sarcastic. I think as I've gotten older, I've probably tried to move away from that kind of cheap nihilism. I think Burroughs, the thing I liked about Burroughs is just the freedom of it.
Yes.
I think in a way I live much more conservatively. I have a wife and two kids, but in my mind I like to just go wherever I choose.
Yeah. There was a pretty rapid rise for the band as you ripped through your first few albums in the late 90s and early 2000s. You had songs featured in film and on television, including your big hit Moment in the Sun, which was used as the theme song for the second season of NBC's comedy drama Ed. But the song was only used for that second season. Why?
Oh, I don't, you know, that's a strange and complicated story as to how that song ended up being used for second season of Ed, because I found this out later on that it was largely to do with 9/11. 9/11 had interrupted their business such that they were so desperate that they ended up having to use it, but they never really got behind it, and I think that the fans were not so in love with it. Most people preferred the other one.
When it's my moment in the sun, oh, how beautiful I'll be.
Yeah, somebody said, one of the fans of Ed said it sounded like someone torturing a yak, which I don't think is right at all. I think it's a beautiful song, and it really captures the vibe of Ed.
I think it sounds more like someone gently caressing a yak.
Yes, exactly.
My voice is the sound of a happy yak. I think the irony, it's a delicious irony that song is all about a very fleeting moment in the sun. It was aware of itself in a crazy sort of way.
To say, and you'd be wise to listen good.
Clem Snide's Wikipedia page refers to an ill-fated post 9/11 tour. Can you tell me a bit about that?
Yeah, right. So that record, The Ghost of Fashion, came out spring of 2001. So September 8th, 2001, we kicked off our big cross-country tour. Mm-hmm. Oh, all right, let me tell you, I'll tell you the best story about touring during 9/11. This is a true story. So we're in San Antonio, Texas, like September 14th, you know, just days after. And we're driving a big 15-passenger van with New York plates, maroon. And we're lost in San Antonio, and we're taking all kinds of weird turns. And all of a sudden, there's one cop behind us, and two, and three, and they're yelling at us. And one of them comes up to the window, and they pull us out of the van. And they're like, get down on the ground. They make us lay down on the ground. And they start reaching into our pockets and pull out my wallet. And they're just like rifling through my wallet. It's okay, we're musicians, you know. And they thought that there was an APB out, that there were some terrorists about in a maroon 15-passenger van with New York plates. And then we kept getting stopped. We got stopped two more times. One time we got stopped in the middle of nowhere. We were driving through the desert in West Texas, and we get pulled over, and the cop shines this flashlight in the van, and he goes, oh, you're that band. All right, never mind. So there were only two bands in Texas then, the terrorists and Clem Snide.
When it's my moment in the sun, I won't forget that I am blessed.
Interesting. Yeah, that's a great story. So when did things start to fall apart for Clem Snide? Maybe with all these APB stops, or
that was the beginning.
Yeah. So what happened?
Well, you know, it was hard to keep it all together, because when you're doing it at that level, you start to get some success and a little bit of money starts coming in, and then it sort of morphs into more of a business. And all the while, one guy, Jason, got his girlfriend pregnant, and then they had to move to France. Huh. People were always dropping out, the drummer, Eric. Well, you know, it's kind of a slow motion accident, as the song says.
Right.
But yeah, by 2010, I was the last man standing. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. There was a time when fans could hire you to write original songs for them. Our producer, Brad, hired you to write a song for his wife, Jenny, to celebrate their 10th wedding anniversary.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Did writing these songs for people change the way you approached writing songs for yourself?
Yeah, I'd say it really has helped me. You know, it really has, because in a way, when you're writing a song for someone else, you can really kind of take your own ego out of it completely and put yourself into this other person's perspective. So you would think, it's almost counterintuitive. You would think, you know, there's only so much songwriting, you know, juice inside, and I'm using it for these personal songs. But I found that the more songs I wrote for people, the more songs I wrote just in general, you know, it opened up that portal ever wider.
Oh, Jenny, my sweet wife, go run with a kid. And then tumble in sweet peals of laughter.
You've got this new album out, this new Clem Snide album, Forever Just Beyond. And you've said about this album, you've said that the last 10 years have been a roller coaster of despair and amazing opportunities that somehow present themselves at the last possible second. Can you tell me about this decade of despair that you've experienced?
My decade of despair. Right, so like I was saying before, right around 2010, 2011, things really bottomed out for me. And apart from the band falling apart, and I had a bitter breakup with a former manager, and that cost me a bunch of money. And so here we are, me and my wife, two small kids, and we went into foreclosure, and so I had to declare bankruptcy.
I'm sorry.
See, my thing is, I can't do anything else. I really feel like I was called to do this.
Mm-hmm.
But the darker side of that is maybe I'm just doing it because I don't want to do anything else, which is also true. So I wrestle with that. You know what I'm saying? Like, am I being true as an artist, or am I just being self-indulgent? Anyway, but then I've always worked through that process by writing songs. Like, no matter what I'm going through, I always write my way through it. But then crazy stuff would fall down into my lap and save me financially. In 2015, don't even ask me how I ended up with this gig, but I wrote a little turnaround for Chobani Greek Yogurt, and for about 4 to 6 months, I was the voice of Chobani Greek Yogurt.
It's the only 100-calorie light Greek yogurt with zero preservatives. To love this life is to live it naturally.
And I was even in the commercials. They put me in the commercials. I wore a hat, a little vest. I was the minstrel, the wandering minstrel. Yeah. And that saved me financially and my family. So it's like surfing, you know, just try and stay on the board.
Yeah.
You know, wait for your wave and then hope you don't get knocked off the board.
Yeah.
That's the best analogy I can think
exactly.
of.
Exactly. It's a good analogy. And so this new Clem Snide album is called Forever Just Beyond. It's produced by folk rock heavy hitter Scott Aivett of the Aivett Brothers. How did you meet Scott?
Yeah, actually, someone, a dear and old fan, Mark, you know who you are, Mark, sent me a link of Scott Aivett playing a rather obscure Clem Snide song as an encore at one of their big shows.
I did not write this song. It's a Clem Snide song, if y'all want to go check it out.
And so, yeah, I reached out to him at first more through management, you know, mm-hmm. but he got back to me quick. And then, yeah, I just kept sending him songs. I just was trying to entice him to work together and to maybe make a record. And he agreed. You know, what an angel.
Did you know these were Roger Ebert's dying words?
The opening track and the first single is called Roger Ebert. What inspired this song?
Yeah. I've always been very interested in near-death experiences. And I think I was going down some rabbit hole along those lines, and I stumbled upon an interview with Chaz, Roger's wife, after he died. And she just talked about the experience that he was having in those last few moments. And he really did seem to starting to kind of see behind the curtain, you know, and he was writing her notes that said it's all an elaborate hoax.
He wrote in a note that he passed to his wife as he felt himself shedding the skin of this life. It said, there is a vastness that can't be contained or described as a thought in the flesh of our brain. It's everything, everywhere, future and past, dissolving together in eternal flash.
And that feels right to me. You know, I'm not a religious person. I was raised by godless Jews, but the thing I like about religion is religion gives you a way to turn your sorrow into grace. So I like to advocate for spirit, not so much for body, you know?
Yeah, that makes sense.
I think we get too much body, not enough spirit in the culture, you know?
Have you thought about releasing Roger Ebert as a vinyl 45 with a song called Gene Siskel on the B-side?
Yeah, I know. No one. Gene Siskel went straight to hell. Yeah. No one. Yeah. He was the evil one, right? Yeah, Roger was like the good one, and Siskel was more the negative Nancy.
Yeah.
No, I didn't mean that. I take that back.
Okay.
It's all an elaborate hoax. It's all an elaborate hoax.
Your signature sense of dark, dry humor really shows up on a song like Easy, which features the line, it's easy to say you would never sell out when no one has made you an offer. Are you open to offers these days to sell out?
Yeah, that kind of goes with what I was saying just before, I guess, that we all have these false ideas about ourselves. We all think we're good, we all think we're brave, and we all think we're right. And in a way, you never really know yourself unless you're tested. So you know what I'm saying? Like the point of life in a way is to suffer, I think. It's to turn your suffering into grace.
Yeah, that's the Buddhist view, isn't it? Life is suffering, yeah.
Yeah, you don't really know who you are until you've really been tested by life.
It's easy to say you would never sell out.
So was creating these songs on Forever Just Beyond, was it therapeutic for you?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's always, writing a good song, it's always the most therapeutic thing there is for me.
Yeah. And do you hope that these songs are therapeutic for listeners?
That would be the most wonderful thing, absolutely. I mean, it has to connect with other people. It doesn't, that's another thing too about it, I realized, is it's like if a tree falls in the forest and there's no one there to hear it, like it actually doesn't make a sound.
Right.
I can solve that ancient riddle. It doesn't. Believe me, I know firsthand. If there's no one there, they hear it. So yeah. This is true with songs. They live inside of other people's brains and hearts and souls, whatever, you know.
Yves Barzelay is the man behind the latest Clem Snide album, Forever Just Beyond. Find out more about Yves and Clem Snide at wpr.org/beta.
That's the way Hollywood used to work. You bet on talent, even if you didn't understand the screenplay. You would say, I'm going with this guy because this guy is Robert Towne, and his talent is the best way to ensure a successful picture.
Sam Wasson on how the movie Chinatown marked the end of an era in Hollywood. Sam joins us to talk about this landmark film in just a moment. I'm Doug Gordon. You're listening to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio.